be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Tarlhurst End Podcast Extra. My name is Dan Wimbush. You might remember me from, you know, posting this podcast back in the day. A few things have happened over the years. Things have gone. You know, Mark done a brilliant job taking over, as did Ollie Allen. They've both gone into a well-earned Tarlhurst End Podcast retirement. But at the same time, my life has changed a little bit. So I thought, you know what? Let's call it a comeback. I'll come back. So don't worry if you are a big fan of the Tarlhurst End Podcast and its regular guys that Mark has been hosting for the last few years. Don't worry, that's not going anywhere. It's going to be back as usual with all of our usual analysis, getting into the fan perspective, diving deep into games and things like that. What this show will be is, as the Podcast Extra was originally, it was a little bit of an offshoot. I used to speak to like some Charles Watts and other journalists and just kind of getting a bit more of a newsy focus. So initially, that's what this show is going to be. And we've picked an absolutely great night for it because there is so much news to get into for Reading Football Club. I'm delighted to say, for the first edition of this rebirth of the show, I'm joined by two esteemed local journos. Firstly, Andy Preston. Andy, good evening to you, my friend.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely delighted to have you here. And Jimin Lee as well joins us. Jimin, how are you?
All good, all good. Thank you for having me on the pod as well.
Gents, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on. Before we delve into the stories, of course, we've got the latest on Reading's managerial hunt. We've got the news that the women's side is going part-time. And not to mention the fact the transfer window is going to be opening in just a few days' time. So we've got lots of incomings and outgoings and rumours to discuss as well. But chaps, just very quickly, for those people that might not be familiar with your work, just explain your kind of background and how you cover the club. Andy, starting with you.
Yeah, so I work for Reading Today, newspaper and website. I've been covering Reading FC for just over 4 years now. So I started in April 2019. So at the back end of the 18-19 season when Jose Gomez was in charge, and have yet seen quite a few managers and quite a few newsworthy pieces in that time.
And Jimin, what about yourself?
So yeah, I write for the same paper as Andy does. I write for Reading Today and Woking Today. We are a sister publication. But yeah, I've been a news reporter for all of 14 months now, I think. At the start of last season, I had the opportunity to cover a couple of preseason games, and I kind of guess my coverage of Reading has gradually snowballed from there. You'll kind of find me using social media, Twitter, TikTok, written content, of course. And yeah, it's been a really interesting first season to follow Reading. I think that, you know, from a footballing standpoint, it's not been very fun, but from a professional journalistic standpoint, it's been really interesting to kind of take a behind the scenes look of how things are going on with the club at a pretty difficult time.
Yeah, not, you know, it's been quiet. What are you talking about? You know, points deductions, relegations, all that jazz, manager changes, just a normal run-of-the-mill season, really. Look, great to have the two of you on board. As I said, there's one question on the lips of every single Reading fan as we go into tonight. So we're recording this on Tuesday, the 6th of June. That big question is, gents, is Junior Hoylett going to sign that new contract?
Who knows? They put out his birthday message, I think it was yesterday. So Junior Hoylett is the man that everyone wants to hear from. So fingers crossed he'll be here.
But in all seriousness, of course, we have the news about the new manager. Chris Wilder is the name on everybody's lips at the moment, rather than Junior Hoylett, who I'm sure everybody, you know, most people would like to see stay. But Jimin, let's start with the big fish. Chris Wilder, there's been lots of different stories saying it was going to happen. People supposedly in the know saying, yep, yeah, it's going to happen. Then it's not going to happen. Where do we stand with Chris Wilder on Tuesday night?
Well, just to start off with, I've very much enjoyed watching and reading what people have had to say. I think it's been a bit of a saga, and it's been played out for quite a long time now. I mean, I say a long time, a week is a long time in football, isn't it? But yeah, I think as far as I'm aware, Chris Wilder is the man that Reading Football Club want in the hot seat at the start of next season. He's been in and around the training ground. He's been at Bearwood. We were speaking off air. He's practically been living at the facility for the past couple of weeks. But, you know, obviously it's not a done deal yet. As far as I know, talks are still ongoing. So it's just a case of making sure that everything is in place. You know, both parties have got to be happy. It's a really tricky one. We can't just be giving him absolutely everything because we've got to be realistic. We're coming out of a really difficult period. And obviously, although the transfer embargo is expected to end, we're obviously still going to have to adhere to some restrictions that the EFL have got. And I think the really important thing to mention is the fact that the club are still talking to other people as well. It's not a case of putting all our eggs in one basket. And I think that the worst case scenario is, and you know, it might not be what people want to hear, but if Chris Wilder isn't the manager, we've got to have a contingency plan. There's got to be someone else lined up. So I think that's how things stand. I know it's not the most exciting answer. We want to hear that talks are almost coming to an end. But as far as I'm aware, that is where we stand right now.
Andy, what do you think the potential holdup might be on this? If Wilder is indeed the club's first choice, do you think this is the holdup's coming from the Wilder side? Or do you think the holdup may be coming from the Reading side? Where do you kind of lean on that?
I have to say, I would be guessing if I had to, you know, give a definitive answer. But if I'm going to, I would say it's probably on Chris Wilder's side. I think, you know, from Reading's perspective, you know, like Jimin said, he is the number one target. He is the man they want. And I believe he has been offered the job. So you can only assume the holdup is on Chris Wilder's side, whether he's waiting for other offers to come in. We can only speculate. But yeah, Reading are very much keen on getting him in. So I can only assume the holdup is from him rather than the club.
Yeah, and Jimin, Andy makes the good point of kind of other clubs may be coming in for Chris Wilder. Is the onus really on both sides to get this deal done? Because the longer it goes on, I mean, people have been coming up to me saying, oh, Chris Wilder to Reading. How are you managing to get him into a League One club? Is there this danger that for whatever reason, this deal is going to snag up and Reading will see this one slip between their fingers, Tommy Smith style?
Well, I mean, I guess you could see it in one of two ways. I think, yes, it's not a good sign that it's going on for so long because, you know, we are getting closer to that stage where players are going to be coming back in a couple of weeks' time. But I guess on the other hand, you could see it from a point of view that the fact that it is taking a long time potentially suggests that they're in, you know, quite advanced stages of the talks. You know, if it was something that he wasn't interested in at all, I'm sure he would have quashed this a long time ago. But the fact that, you know, these rumours and the fact that he's still talking to the club is, I can only see that as a positive. But as you alluded to, I think it is important for both parties and for everyone involved that, you know, a decision is made sooner rather than later. We all know the rigours of League One. We know how tricky it will be next year. There's just so much football to be played with no international breaks, an extra cup competition. So it's, there's not really going to be much time once the season starts to bed things in, you know, patterns of play, defensive shape. So it's super important that we bring in whoever it is, as much as we'd all like it to be, well, I feel like everyone wants it to be Wilder. You know, you want that decision or that that call to be made as soon as possible.
Andy, again, though, is there the danger? I mean, we'll get into some of the worries and concerns that Reading fans have been having towards the club. But if this deal doesn't go through, is there that danger that, And you know, Jimin said that they've been talking to other people. They're still talking to other people. Is there the danger, though, that if they don't get Wilder, anybody else is going to kind of be seen as second choice or second best?
Yeah, that's something we mentioned earlier as well. And yeah, I think there is a danger in that. If you put all your eggs in one basket and you don't get your number one target, that, yeah, another potential manager could see themselves as second choice and maybe they'd have second thoughts on it. From what I know, Nathan Jones had been at the training ground a couple of weeks back and reportedly had been having talks with the club as well. And maybe he's not as popular of choice as Chris Wilder, but you know, his stock is still pretty high for a League One club to attract a manager of that calibre, I think would be quite a coup.
Yes, you mean, who would, if it's not Chris Wilder, is there anyone that's, you know, name-wise that's come up that you would think, yeah, I'll take them?
I'm going to be boring. I really think that Nathan Jones, I'm going to agree with Andy. I think Nathan Jones is the one if it's not going to be Chris Wilder. The other names that have been kind of thrown around haven't really filled me with too much enthusiasm. I get the sense that with a lot of the people who aren't Nathan Jones and Chris Wilder, the Reading job would be seen to them to be a step up And given the importance of next season, we'd want to bring in someone who is established in this division, who is comfortable working, in League One or potentially the Championship, and not see Reading as the kind of dream job. You know, you'd want someone who's coming in there and thinking, you know what, I'm comfortable in this position. I think I can do a good job here.
Yeah. And has there been anything, I mean, for either of you about this whole process that worries you from an outside point of view? Or are you two both sort of just like, well, it's the process, it takes a while? Is there something that's starting to sort of gnaw away at you? I'll start with you, Andy.
I think the main concern would be that they haven't got a manager in place in, you know, the time restriction they put. You know, the rumors coming around the club was that they wanted a manager in early June to get in as early as possible, work pre-season, get their targets in. And, you know, we're still in early June and these processes take time, but you can sense the frustration starting to grow around the fan base. And I expect, you know, that there are figures at the club who will be concerned if it is in Chris Wilder's hands and they're still waiting on him to make a decision. You know, that can be frustrating for the club. You know, they're just waiting about and not able to start planning properly for the season yet.
Yeah, any concerns coming up from your end, Jimin?
Yeah, I mean, as Andy was saying, I think that the club had set themselves a sort of internal deadline of the 1st of June. We want to have a manager in place by then. The fact that it's not happened means that we're behind schedule. And I think that's clear for everyone to see. I believe we're the only League One team not to have appointed a manager or to be managerless. And we've all seen the numbers. You know, it's been 50-something days without a permanent manager. And that's never a good thing. As I was alluding to before, you know, you want to have a good preseason. You want to get off to a good start. This project rebuilds, you know, the sooner we can get this underway, the better. And I think that it will just help the fans. It will help with players who have been offered contracts, you know, just to know who's going to be the manager. And it will help with that as well. I just think that so many dominoes will start falling once the manager's put in place. So I just think it's important. And so, yes, in answer to your question, I think, you know, you can read a lot of negativity into the fact that it's taking so long. But I will caveat that and say, if it is, a couple of days or a week longer now, if we can have that same manager in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the line, it'll be worth it. You know, a matter of days won't be, it won't kill you. But bringing in the wrong person, might do.
Yeah, I think the whole thing on the lips of fans has been this whole rebuild or reset, whatever you want to call it. I mean, I think every fan would have preferred this whole rebuild to have been done in the Championship. I know the club certainly would like to have done. But I think that's been the one kind of thing that you've held on to as a supporter is that, okay, well, this gives us a chance to rebuild really from the ground up. But Andy, do you sense that that is still, is that optimism well placed? Have you sort of been seeing things from behind the scenes, either on or off the record, that makes you think, yeah, the club is turning the page? Maybe the page isn't turning as quickly as we like, but do you, you know, can you see why fans should be optimistic, or would you be saying maybe be a little bit more cautious right now?
Yeah, I think there are definitely reasons to be optimistic, and I think we saw some of those plans put in place last summer with Mark Bowen coming in, with Mark Carey, and his name escapes me, but the guy they brought in from Sheffield United as
Jared,
well.
Jared Dublin,
yes. So those were plans that were put in place that, you know, there were roles that probably should have been filled years ago. But thankfully, those voids have been filled. And another point of optimism, I'd say, is the club's academy. And, you know, there's always good players coming through at Reading, being in League One now. There's a chance for those players to be showcased in the senior team. Hopefully, we'll see plenty breakthrough next season and, grasp their opportunity.
Yes, I mean, what have you made of the club's communications? Because that's been a real sort of wrangling point. And, you know, you guys are in the business of communicating and keeping fans informed. And there just seems to have been a little bit of a void since, you know, relegation. People, you know, you mentioned it's been, what, forever, 50-odd days since we've had a permanent manager, since relegation was confirmed. Other clubs have been putting out grand statements and things like that and putting people up. But other than a tweet on the night we got relegated and a little bit of communication around the season ticket renewal and that whole, the way that was handled from a marketing point of view, I know did ruffle some feathers amongst fans as well with rises and the way it was presented. But again, can you understand why maybe the club haven't been coming out with lots of grand statements? Or again, does that kind of niggle away at you as a bit of a concern?
You know, I think in answer to your question, I think fans have every right to be disappointed not to hear something. You know, I'm not going to beat about the bush here. I think they should have put something out, something substantial, at least once the season was done. Like you said, you see other clubs doing it. I think that's pretty much the done thing. I think 100% they should have done something. But in terms of the reasons why, I can imagine that maybe the club wanted to bring in a manager and have some sort of campaign, you know, we're starting again, Project Restart, and maybe address it there. It's taking a bit longer, so obviously it's not a good look. And it's potentially delayed them being able to communicate that. But 100%, I think that they should have put something out, and it's a little bit disappointing that they haven't done that, to be honest.
Well, let's move on for the manager recruitment to the other thing that everyone's really interesting, of course, is players. We've been used to the past few seasons of a really kind of, with the embargo and the restrictions we've had, this late scramble, this putting this squad together, you know, for money you find down the back of the sofa, and players that, you know, the whole island of misfit mascots that we seem to have had. This year promised to be something different. You know, we had Mark Bowen saying we're kind of out of the embargo. Yes, we've got a budget handed to us, but we're kind of much more free to go about this. We sit here in early June, and again, we've not really heard very much. Let's, you know, start with the incomings. We'll talk about some of the outgoings maybe in just a second. But Andy, have you heard anything on an incoming basis about players that are being linked with bringing into the club? Or is this all again sort of waiting for the manager?
Unfortunately, it's not going to be the answer that fans want to hear. But right now, the rumour mill in terms of players is very short. And that definitely has something to do, obviously, not having a manager in place. But I'm sure Mark Bowen is drawing up a list of targets, you know, players that they could potentially get. Obviously, we're not going to see Reading go out and splash a load of money just because of the embargo going. But there'll certainly need to be a lot of players coming in. I think the area that concerns me the most right now is midfield. If you look, I think they were like last season. You know, we've seen Mamadou Loon, Jeff Hendrick both return from their loan spells. Obviously, they won't be coming back to the club. And Dejan Tetek, another midfielder, on the release list. I think in an ideal world, you'd want to bring in three or four midfielders. But obviously, there are other areas that you need to address too. So hopefully, you know, the manager situation can get resolved as quickly as possible, and then they can get their targets in.
Do you mean anything your end? Have you know, are you seeing Reading linked with any players? You know, we've had this whole, well, they are under kind of a budget, so they can't spend. And then I've seen other people saying, well, there's no FFP in League One. We could go out on a big spending spree. Are you expecting movement soon? Or again, is it just all going to be dependent on the manager?
Well, I think Bowen put out something. I think it was when we had the points deduction. I think he came out and said that, you know, the club aren't going to be splashing the cash as soon as we're out of the embargo. And I don't think that they're going to do anything different from that. I think that, you know, he's a sensible guy. He'll make sure that we don't, you know, we're not going to be a kid in a candy shop and just go out and spend big just because we can. Well, at least I hope that they won't, and I'm fairly certain that they won't. But as Andy said, I think midfield's a massive, massive problem area. We were in a pretty similar situation last year, but being in the Championship, you're thinking about the quality of players that you can bring in by, you know, saying you're a Championship team. You're getting those loan players from Chelsea. That might be slightly more difficult being a League One team. You know, the quality of player that you're going to be able to bring in isn't going to be Cesare Cassidy. You know, it's going to be a slightly less developed academy product if you are able to bring someone in. I think that this has been the most quiet June kind of transfer rumour mill that I've seen at Reading, being a journalist or being a fan, to be honest.
Yeah, it's all very, very almost too quiet. There's been a handful of vague rumours floated around from football gossip sites, but again, there's been nothing kind of concrete. And I guess, as I said, we're waiting for that managerial appointment, because he will obviously dictate the kind of style we want. And I suppose that's good, because I think what you don't want to see is the mistake that's been made in in the past of players almost being bought for a manager. I remember Brian McDermott famously talking about how he walked into a hotel room and Pavel Pogrebniak was there, as Anton Zingarevich just kind of presented him as a player. And I think, you know, we've all heard the stories of agent influence and things like that have gone on with the various regimes that the club has had in the last decade. So whilst I'm annoyed as well that I've not actually seen players in through the door, I guess it's nice that we're waiting for this manager so you can at least, you know, marry the two together. So fingers crossed, as soon as that appointment's made, players will come in. We have had news, though, about players that have left the club. And I was joking about Junior Hoyler at the top of the show. He's one of two players that have been offered new deals alongside Yaku Mate. Andy, Yaku Mate was a name that I think everyone had pretty much given up his time at Reading Football Club. He seemed to be saying goodbyes after the Wigan game. So we sit here in June again, no news. Does the longer this goes on, does that play into Reading's hands? Could you see Yaku Mate staying at the club?
My honest answer would be no, I couldn't see him staying. But you make a good point. The longer it goes on, you know, there's maybe a bit of optimism there. I'm sure he's not going to be short of offers. He's a talented player. He's shown, you know, when he was fit at championship level, he scored plenty of goals. You know, he's had his injury problems, but he's been a real asset to Reading in the last few years. You know, he's got so much pace, so much power, and he'd be a fantastic player to have in League One. You know, he's also a player that has a great relationship with the fans, and you know that's something that can't be said for many of the players that have been around for the last 4 or 5 years. So whether that could influence his decision or not, we're not sure. But yeah, I expect he'll have offers from France, Belgium, possibly some championship teams too. But yeah, I think if they can keep him, he'd be a fantastic asset to have in League One.
Do you mean any optimism on your end?
It's funny, I'm convinced that the future of Yaku Mate will determine the future of Amadou Mbengue. You know, them two are just such good friends that if we are, on the off chance, able to keep him, I think it's genuinely, and I'm only half joking when I say this, I think it's genuinely a little bit more likely that we could keep hold of Mbengue. In terms of Mate, I'm the same with Andy. I think that he's a player that will have offers elsewhere. You know, being, you know, from Ivory Coast, you know, he'll have that, and being from France as well, he'll have that kind of desire to potentially go back, you know, be closer to his family. So you never know. Like you said, it's been going on for a while now. And if you'd asked me after that Wigan game when he was saluting the fans, is Yaku Mate going to be a Reading player next year? I would have said 100% no. Now, you know, it's starting to look like it could happen. But I'd still say that I'm not too positive on that one.
What are we down to? What, about 95% it's not going to happen?
You know what? I'd say that I'm actually further down than 95. I'd genuinely say that I'm potentially 85, 80. Still pretty high, but I mean, yeah.
So to quote Jim Carrey, you're saying there's a chance.
100%.
We have, the club have already confirmed that Scott Dan, Luke Southwood, Shane Long, Liam Moore, Lucas Yao and Tetek have gone. We mentioned Junior Hoylett's considering a contract extension. I mean, Jimin, was there any surprises with that release list? And, you know, if you want to go down to the players in the academy as well, were there any names where you thought, I thought we might have tried to keep them?
Well, I guess the one that everyone was talking about was Luke Southwood, wasn't it? With Joe Lumley not getting signed on, it was always going to be a case of kind of what would happen to Luke Southwood. He had a pretty good season with Cheltenham, and I think that that's something that he will kind of put him in good stead if he's not at Reading, or he's not going to be at Reading next year, but whichever club he ends up at next year, the season that he's put together will be really positive for his future. But yeah, I think that was a bit of a surprise. When you look at the keepers that we have, I'm a huge fan of Kanaya Boyce Clark, and I'd like to see him get an opportunity at Reading. So, yeah, I can't say that I personally was too disappointed to see Southwood go. You know, we've got to remember we've got Buzanis still in there, and we've got Anderson as well. So, yeah, there are a few different options, but I'd say that Luke Southwood was probably the one that fans were kind of most talking about.
Andy, any names on that list that you thought maybe we should have done more to keep them around?
To be honest, I have to echo what Jimin said. I think, you know, Southwood was the one that everyone was talking about. There was a big clamour from fans to maybe see him give another chance. But like Jamin said, we've got Kanaya Boyce-Clark, a young, really promising goalkeeper there. You know, we've got an experienced goalkeeper in Dean Bazanis. It's maybe not a priority area for them to, you know, keep Luke Salford around. Another name, maybe if you'd shown me a couple of years ago, Dejan Tetek. He's had his injury problems, but always speaking to Veljko Paunovic, he was very hot on him. He was really, you know, hopeful for his future. But yeah, I think his growth's been stunted by injuries, unfortunately. And yeah, unfortunately, he's not going to be around next season. Other than that, I don't think there was really too many surprises. There was never really going to be any hope to keep Lucas Jao around. I think a lot of fans are happy to see the back of him.
Couldn't even stay around to the end of the season.
Well, yeah. Yeah, personally, I've always fought his corner. I really enjoyed watching him play, but I don't think you can defend a player when then they don't bother to turn up to the last game. So, yeah, I don't think there were too many surprises in the release list.
Yeah, I'm hoping Boyce-Clark signs that new deal. He's been offered a new 3-year deal with the club, so I'm hoping he does sign that. I joked about him, so we should give him his due and talk about him because he is that other player that has been offered that deal as well, as you mean, with Junior Hoylett. A player that divides a bit of opinion. I think it's safe to say he didn't have a great campaign last year, injury hit. Has he got a role to play in League One, or should this have been another one where you're just like, you know what, thanks, but we're moving on?
I think the one thing that I would say in his defence was that he wasn't playing in his natural position for the majority of last year when he was playing. I'm getting flashbacks to Burnley away. Obviously, he was at fault for that late goal. But on the whole, I felt that, you know, you look at his stats and his stats were obviously disappointing given where he was playing in the pitch. You know, there's definitely got to be some sort of defence there for him. He's 33 years old, I believe, which is, you know, he's not going to be signing a long-term contract. But for another year, you know, he's a solid player. I think that he's a player who's versatile. I think that that's a really important thing. But I think it also comes down to the manager, and it always does. I think that if we play the way that Chris Wilder is touted to play, I think that someone like Junior Hoylett could be important because, you know, with your famous overlapping centre-backs, you know, the two wide men on the left and right become really important on both ends of the pitch. So, yeah, I think that Junior Hoylett, and also the other thing to say about Hoylett is that, you know, he was training at Bearwood at the start of the summer after the season was finished. So there is still some sort of a relationship. It's not a, you know, cut ties completely sort of thing. So, yeah, I do see hope for him to sign on. And it's one of them ones where, you know, I wouldn't be too, you know, I wouldn't be too excited if he were to stay, and I wouldn't be too despondent if he wasn't going to stay. So, yeah, we'll just have to wait and see how that one pans out.
Well, plenty of time. I said the transfer window is rapidly opening. What is it? I think is it officially open on the 12th, something like that, after the Champions League final. So, you know, we'll wait to see what happens. But, I mean, on paper, the show was probably supposed to end about there, other than, you know, or any other business and things like that. However, in between me putting together this first show plan and us actually recording this tonight, another major bit of communication came out from the club, and it's one that I think will almost universally be, you know, it's just sad, I think is the best way to sum it up. The news that the women's side, the Reading FC women's side, will now be moving back to a part-time, semi-professional, whatever you want to call it. They've described it as being part-time infrastructure. Of course, they were fully professional, competing in the WSL for many years, suffered relegation. The club have put out a statement that basically pins the blame on the finances. It's underlined with this paragraph here that I'll sort of get into it with. They say, "We recognise that the women's game is making huge progress. However, despite seeing a considerable spike in interest following the England women's team of the Euros last summer, an increase in average gate for Reading FC women and a boost in sponsorship and broadcast revenue, and as a result, our owner still needs to provide just under 1 million to finance Reading FC women in 2023. In addition, relegation to the WSL Championship will result in a significant drop in broadcast fees and central funding from the FA." I mean, gentlemen, both of you tweeted out your thoughts, and again, kind of echoing the disappointment and the sadness. I mean, Jimin, try and sort of, you know, sum up your thoughts on this issue and, you know, your reaction. Now you've had a few hours to think about both sides of it.
I think, like you say, it's incredibly sad. I think that the team had been punching above their weight for a number of years. We were the only championship team to have a WSL side for quite a few of the years that we were up there. And we, you know, we achieved some really strong finishes as well, finishing on top of a lot of the big teams, you know, the ones that have got really successful men's teams. And I think that my first thought goes to the staff and the players who are going to be affected by this decision. I think that it's a product. What's happening now is a product of how poorly run the club has been on the men's side. And it's a bit disappointing that the women are the ones that have to, you know, suffer because of it, even though, you know, intrinsically they've not done anything wrong. Well, I mean, you could argue that some of the performances on the pitch this season weren't great, but I mean, that's by the by. I think that it's a shame because you're looking at the landscape of women's football in the world, in this country, and they've taken so many steps forwards, and to see us be the ones to take, you know, a step back, it seems like, it's quite disappointing. And I think that there's another conversation that needs to be had with regards to whether or not clubs like Reading have a responsibility, you know, to push women's football, to push women's sport. You know, Reading FC is a symbol. It's a really big thing in the town. And so to have a women's team has been something that, you know, people in the town can be really proud of. Of course, we'll still have a women's team, but to take away the funding, I mean, just in terms of the message that sends out to, you know, a young girl who's maybe trying to start out in football, really enjoying her football at school or at her local club, what kind of message does this send out? I know that there's a financial incentive to, or financial reason for doing this. And I do understand what fans are saying in terms of, you know, we need to cut our losses. But I question whether or not this is the place or the best place to have tried to do that.
Yeah, in this media release, we actually hear a rare comment. We don't actually hear from him that often. CEO Dayong Pang saying, difficult but necessary financial decisions being made across the business following the club's relegation to League One last season. And after discussion with the FA, the decision to operate Reading FC women on a part-time basis represents the most viable solution at this present time. Is this just a financial decision? Do you think there's something more to this, Andy? I mean, when you read all of this, what were your thoughts?
Firstly, I was devastated at the news. It actually made me quite angry. I think it's inevitable that there'd probably be some kind of cutback with the team being relegated. And Kelly Chambers had alluded to it many times that, you know, Reading had not had the investment that other women's Super League teams have had. And, you know, ultimately that cost them relegation. So, I think it probably is purely a financial decision. You know, the point that you could argue is that it's a drop in the ocean for the owner to invest $1 million a year in keeping the women's team going. And, you know, it is the best way to go, you know, converting to this part-time model, or is it keeping with this full-time model and trying to win back promotion to the Women's Super League and then eventually, you know, having a self-sustaining women's team?
Yeah, it's such a, you know, it's such a difficult one because you look at those figures and you know, as the club statement said, you know, despite all of the things going up and up and up, if the money is still draining from the club, it's interesting. We're in a time in the men's game where so much focus now is on sustainability. You know, the very reason Reading have been punished with these points deductions is because they're not sustainable, that the club's model isn't working. Do you think the club might well have turned around to the FA and said, look, on the one hand, you're saying to our men's side, well, you can't run at this rate because you're losing too much money. But, you know, we can't be expected to run our, you know, women's side at a loss either, even if there are, you know, as you said, much wider benefits to the community. Do you think this might even be like a little subtle dig from the club towards the FA and the kind of structure and the finances in the women's game?
That's a really interesting perspective, and it's not one that I can say that I actually thought about when I heard the news. But I think there's a really interesting point in what you're saying there. I think the club are focused on the rebuild with the men's team. I think that is their priority. I genuinely do believe the stuff that's come out from Dayong. I think that They genuinely see this as the best way to push the men's team forward and get it back to where it belongs, which I guess a lot of fans might actually be happy about. But I'm sure everyone would have liked to have seen the women's team stay up. I mean, I think that whether or not it's a dig to the FA, I'm not sure. I don't think so. But you bring up a really interesting point there. And I think that away from Reading, I think there's a really interesting conversation to be had with regards to sustainability in the women's game. I think we're at a point now where it's, you know, it's making its first steps. So people are just thinking, you know what, money, any money is good money at this point. But there will come a point where people are starting to think about fairness in the women's game. And I think that will be when what you're talking about really comes to the fore. And I think that that's actually a really, really interesting topic to discuss.
I still remain my status as an unprofessional joke as a podcaster, but I can very, very occasionally find an interesting point somewhere. I mean, Andy, what do you think this means for the future of the women's side? I mean, you look at the level of teams within the women's championship, and I was looking at the list earlier. It's a really fascinating mismatch of teams. You've got some teams like Southampton that are professional. You've got like Lou who are in there. I think Durham are in there as well. It's a real mismatch. I mean, yes, this team are going to be moving part-time, but is this, I think we can all agree, this is a very, again, it's horrible for the people that are going to be potentially losing jobs, losing income, and that's all horrible. But from a purely footballing standpoint, is this as necessarily, you know, disastrous as, you know, is this the end of the world, effectively? Are we, do you thinking this is going to see the women's team drop like a stone, or is this a, well, no, actually, you will still be able to compete at that level of women's football right now?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that there are other teams in that division who are part-time as well. So it's not like, you know, Reading are suddenly going to get, well, they could, but get relegated from the championship and keep falling down. But hopefully they can stay competitive. I think it's also important to note that the players that are under full-time contracts, those will be honoured. I think that's an important step from the club and one that they had to make. You know, but with that being said, the squad's going to be very different next season. They're going to lose a lot of players, you know, players that deserve to be playing full-time professional football. And that's going to be such a shame to lose so many assets from the club. But let's hope that they can bounce back quickly because, you know, the women's game is growing massively. The broadcast revenue is going up every year. So you want your team to be in the Women's Super League. So hopefully Reading can get a quick return, but I can't say I'm too optimistic after this news.
Yeah, look, I mean, best of luck. Again, hopefully the whole kind of rebuild that's going on the men's side will be mirrored on the women's side and, you know, both sides can come up together. I mean, I can't think many clubs have had the pleasure, and I'd use that in the most ironic of terms, of seeing both of their sides relegated in the same season. So, you know, the sooner 2023 is in the rearview mirror, I think the better for Reading Football Club. So look, again, absolutely gutted for those people behind the scenes that are working so hard. You know, there's been lots of thoughts on social media from people past and present involved with that club. We can only hope that they bounce back. And again, performances on the pitch and the infrastructure off the pitch continues to improve. And again, we're sat here in a year's time talking about Championship football and WSL football. Let's at least, you know, we can keep our optimistic hat on as we sit here in June. You know, everybody starts as title contenders in June. But gentlemen, before we ride off into the sunset and close the book on this first episode of the return of the podcast extra, is there anything either of you two would like to bring up, Andy?
I'd just like to say that for any extra ready news, as well as Tile West End, to keep up to date, go to Reading Today, Woken Today, and, you know, you can find myself and Jimin on Twitter as well. Jimin also very hot on TikTok. You know, he's up to date with the new social media. So, yeah, hopefully people can enjoy our content there.
Yeah, but you're on MySpace as well, Jimin, right? You know, all that kind of jazz.
I can't say that I'm on MySpace, but what? Yeah, I that's probably the one social media platform that I don't use.
I'm not sure it exists anymore, does it? I mean, I don't know.
I don't think I was ever on MySpace, actually, even when it was hot.
I've come back significantly older to this podcast, older and with two extra kids behind me. So, but where, Jimmy, where can people follow you?
Yeah, so as Andy said, I'm on Twitter, JML Journo. I'm JML Journo on TikTok as well. Really enjoyed using that this year. And yeah, don't really use Facebook. Instagram as well. I'm JML Journo everywhere. So if you want to follow me or find me anywhere, it's JML Journo.
Yeah, we'll post all of the lads' social media links up on the episode details here on the Tyler Stern podcast as well. Again, thank you so much to everybody who's tuned in today. So we're going to keep this going. The schedule, it's going to kind of be up in the air. I don't think, especially for the summer months, I don't see it being weekly. But as we get in towards the season and plans sort of change and firm up, we're going to do it. I've got a couple of other ideas bubbling away in the background as well for things to get involved with in the Tyler Stern. So stay tuned at the Tyler Stern on Twitter, tylerstern.com or .co.uk, whichever you prefer as well. Lots of great content going up from Sim and the guys over there. As mentioned, the regular podcast will return. Ben and Ross are going to be taking the helm and largely steering it away. Again, fantastic job that Mark has been doing over the last few years. If you missed the end of season wrap up, he's announced his retirement. He's going, you know, as I did, what, six years ago, sailing off into that sunset in a kind of Lord of the Rings-esque ending. He's been granted a place on the boats and gets to go to that podcaster retirement place. So thank you to all the work he has done. And thank you to all of our listeners as well. Thank you to ZCZ Films as well for sponsoring the pod, and to all of our Patreons, patreon.com/thetylerstern. If you want to give into that little digital tip jar, that is still very much open. And as I said, lots more exciting things to come. But for now, we are going to say goodbye. So thank you all. And as always, come on, you Rs.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tylehurst End
and facebook.com/thetylehurstend.